Well, we are right now recording. This is the Earth Day Potluck presentation for September 9th, 2017 at the United Crescent Hill Ministries Center, because we said it was going to happen, and it's happening. So at 4 o'clock, a couple hours ago, we had a cooking class, and we had fruits and paired together with vegetables. Sometimes fruits can be too sweet, vegetables can be not sweet enough. Put them together, and it's healthy. Phytonutrition is off the charts. So we had about 9 different dishes. There's pictures. We're going to hopefully put them up on the blog because those are pretty inspiring, and we could talk about those a long time, but we're not really going to be talking about those right now. Just to say that Earth Day, a couple of days ago, on Monday, we went to the Mayor's Hike and Bike, and we had a booth there promoting vegetabilism and the education towards eating of plants quite a bit. And when we were there, we did have... We beckoned people to come over and fill out our questionnaire. The questionnaire results now are, before you, I'd like to present the analysis, if you don't mind. So what happened is that this is called, the people at the vegetable booth, you know, Carolyn and I, said, hey, would you come over and fill out a questionnaire, which is a bunch of yes or no questions. And here's what happened. The first question was, what is your age at your health awakening? And people said, well, ever since birth, my parents, or some people say, oh, at age 64, 73, and all points in between. So there is a huge distribution. So then what is the health awakening? And then, of course, you know, when did you decide that health was important? What age were you? And it really is all over the map, which means that we are here to serve all ages of folks. Because if they're going to be awakened to health, they should be really awakened to beauty and awareness of eating vegetables and all that entails. The first yes or no question that asked was, I know what a tuber is. And most people said, no, 50-50. 50% of people don't know what a tuber is, like a potato or things like that. They just don't know. Like, what's a tuber?
Just turn up a tuber. Yes.
Yeah, anything that grows in the ground like a potato.
Yep, yeah, like a carrot and a turnip and all those, yep. So, and then here the next one is, I read daily. Of course, Earth Day wants to encourage people to be educated about things, and you need to be challenged to, like, read daily. And people ask, you know, do you mean, like, texting and Facebook, or do you mean actually reading books? Because a lot of people don't read books, but they do follow their texting, right, with their friends. So that was almost 100% yes. I was two no's out of 100. And then I compost. What do you think people answered to that one? They were 50-50 about composting. So, well, these are people that have been kind of health awakening, and they will go to Mayor's Hike and Bike, so they drank the Kool-Aid just a little bit. I know why we must cook meat, and all of them said yes. And, of course, the reason that we need to eat meat is because when the animals are slaughtered, they get bacteria from their intestines all over the meat, and it becomes extremely contaminated because intestinal bacteria is very poisonous, and we need to make sure that that bacteria gets at least 150 degrees before it dies. Otherwise, you know, people will get E. coli contamination. So, obviously, Earth Day itself is the idea that we should just, like, avoid meat altogether. But if you're going to be eating meat, you should know that it's made very sloppily, and it's just tossing around all kinds of intestinal operations and things like that. Unless you're a lion and you eat it raw right in the prairie, then you don't have to cook it. I am ethical to humans, and every person said yes, and a couple people picked up on the idea that it's also a possibility that you could be ethical to animals, too, and they say, yes, 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 I'm ethical to animals. So, but also the question is, like, are you ethical to animals, but yet to humans, but then you go to Walmart and you buy shoes that are made in, you know, some sweatshop in Thailand, don't even think it, give it a second thought, which is what the question was meant to prod, and most people didn't even go by that. They just said, yes, I'm ethical. Whew. The next question is, I watched the commercials. Now, if you do watch commercials on TV, if you do watch TV, then you know that they inculcate with so many different messages that are negative, and they're fast, and they're clever, and they're cute, and they're the wrong message to send to the world, and we could go on and on and on. But do you watch the commercials? And the answer is about 50-50. Some people actually don't watch TV at all so that they can't see the commercials. But some people who do watch TV turn it off or go look away. And some of them say, like, yeah, I love the commercials. It was a very interesting response there. And then I avoid foods that give me gas. And, of course, like, you'd want to know, like, if you're going to, like, oh, I would become a vegetarian except for I can't eat beans. Well, I mean, if that's the reason, then we should probably focus on it's an actual reason of physiology rather than psychology. And so that was kind of fascinating. The answers were, I would say, 50-50.
You know, you can get stuff from the health food.
Well, there's a conversation to be had about, but if it is that you avoid it for gas, then that's a conversation to definitely be had.
After about 2 weeks, that phenomenon stopped. Beans everywhere, small enough.
Well, it's all about the enzymes and the cultures of your bacteria in your gut. I mean, there's a long conversation, but what does the general public know? And it's like 50% of the people are avoiding food that gives them gas and don't know some of these aspects. No, I'm just telling you what they actually answered. And I eat lots of raw food, and almost all people said, yes, they eat raw food, which is always going to make them healthy. I don't know if they eat all raw, but they eat a lot of raw. You know, they pick up an apple, or they pick up a this or that. And so, yeah, I would say that they said that most people said that they eat a lot of raw, which is perfectly fine. Yeah. So what happens then is that Earth Day goes to events, and a lot of times we pick up these interesting questionnaires and present them. And we don't do any statistics on it. We don't do any epidemiology on it. Well, that's perfectly fine because we just do it to have an outreach and people like answering questions. I think people like questionnaires. Like, oh, sure, as long as it's not too hard, a bunch of yes and no questions. So given that as a backdrop, it kind of asked the question then for like a presentation at Earth Day, what is going on with respect to like studies, questionnaires, and this, of course, is where the whole idea of science comes in, the whole idea of, you know, that we're rational beings, that there's a lot going on there. And that's where I want to jump on to the bandwagon of this presentation. Now, the presentation will be on the blog, which is metagenny.com/EarthDayBlog, and metagenny.com/EarthDayBlog, metagenny.com/EarthDayBlog. And then when you get there, then you'll be able to see, oh, there it is. So this presentation is going to be up there, and this sound file is also going to be up there. And the hope is that I can get this thing going without having automatic timing. So I'm going to manually move this thing, and then I'm going to start the presentation, which is, where is the presentation start? There we go. Okay. Yeah, well, you'll see that, when I talked about the idea of taking some questionnaires from people and they like that, it brings up the idea of epidemiology, which I'll define in a minute, and in the context of, orientation towards vegetabilism or vegetabilicationization of the entire cosmos, right? That's what my perspective is in. So this is kind of like the thing that's going on, really, when you make food choices, is that there's a thing called science. Like science says, don't eat something really bad for you, you're going to get sick. Or there is the other thing, which is, hey, why don't you buy this from me? It's really cool. Look at the new color red we have. And so you have the whole idea of science or money making to help us make choices about what we do with our food. So the idea is that using food as the gun is actually a war between science and money. And I'm going to bring that out a little further right now. Okay, the first thing I want to talk about is, I think this is the first slide. The first slide has to do with science, statistics, and epidemiology. Wait a minute. Okay. Yep. Okay, the summary of topics now would be a little bit about science, and then health studies, and some vegetarian ideas, and then talking about logic and complacency and the media and marching for science and the null hypothesis with the brain and the health don't tell me what to do. So I want to start it out by starting at the beginning, which is science, okay, stems from cold, hard facts. I have to describe this because the media and politicians are really saying they don't even know what science is, so you have to re-inculcate people with this is what baseline is, okay? Science stems from cold, hard facts that turn into cold numbers that are servants of a goal or a task to solve a mystery. So you don't know, and you find numbers that will then indicate whether or not it's going to work or not. So, and then you take from that cold hard facts and numbers and put it into statistics. They are the synergizing of all those numbers towards solving that mystery, the collection of all those data points, and then solving the mystery involving an entire herd of animals called sociology. So if we want to apply this science and statistics, it's kind of called sociology. And as you can see, this picture here is what kind of science does. It's like, how do you prove through numbers that there's a difference between one and two humps there? Like, are they the same humps or are they different humps? And the answer is they're actually different, and we prove that through our statistical analysis, which is deep into math. So the sociological statistics of health is called epidemiology. Oops. I guess I need to work on that a little bit better, didn't I? And then epidemiology. Epidemiology creates truth and solutions to generate policy for shaping future behavior. So there is, now we're extending from science all the way to making choices about policy, about what we do with our society. And vegetemiology, of course, is finding the truth about vegetables and vegetable diets and things like that. So I coined that term, I've never heard it before, but it is kind of the epidemiology, the sociology of eating vegetables. And a lot of times what happens now is that there is, can everybody see this? I hope everybody, if you can't, just move a little forward, that science calls human health studies clinical trials. So then there's these things called clinical trials. And they are important but can be very expensive, especially if there's life-threatening situations. They are they can be very expensive because there's so many ethics that you need to worry about. And then what has happened in the past, the history, is that clinical trials used to study useful things like, oh, we did a clinical trial on people that did surgery without washing their hands before surgery or after, or not, and then people would like live or die. And what happens is that's good science without an agenda. It's just like, how do you help health, like hand washing? But now clinical trials try to get new chemical or the food thing into advertising without being fined by the government. For instance, hey, we do a clinical trial which is going to show us that eating this new food product is going to be better, or trans fats, all that kind of stuff. So where they're taking their agenda of producing a product and selling a product, they can't just necessarily sell, like, if it's a super drug or a super food or something. They can't say that it's going to be healthy unless they prove that it's healthy, because people could get hurt and whatnot. So it becomes, and then if you actually do something, you'll get fined. Like, no, you can't say those things without being approved by the government first. So health studies are so regulated that no one does them except those with a product to sell and recover costs of the studies. So our clinical trials are kind of gone these days. They're only left to those that have a product to recover once the clinical trials are over. So we're stuck with this beauty of science, and now it's lost because it's so expensive and heavy. So So how do we then, how do we dream about going back to hand washing and doing the simple things like, what, how many vegetables do you really need to eat per day? 3, 7, 12 vegetables a day? You know, I mean, we just, those are not done because no one will ever make any money off of that knowledge. So how do we get there? That's what would be the dream. So obviously these studies, a lot of them are funded by people who do not like the you know, they have a product to sell, which is dairy and eggs and meat. And they're going to study until they get something that shows that vegetables are not all that great. And because I obviously think that vegetables are that great, they just are very sloppy in their science, very sloppy in their numbers, sloppy in their statistics, and they say, oh, there's no difference. So this is what would naturally happen. So scientists conducting studies know where the money is. So the scientists are actually oriented towards, hey, let's do a study on, and they know all the nuances, and they'll make a clinical trial that will show that vegetables are not that good and that meat and dairy is better, because they know where the money is. And they're never going to say it. It's just tacit obedience to the funding mechanisms. And yes, there are financial disclosure and conflict of interest announcements, but there still is that nuance behind the scenes, and you have to be sophisticated to you want to expose that if you want to, or just be aware that it does exist. Because the wind blowing in the same direction moves everything in that direction. So if all the money goes towards that, all the nuance and innuendos, because people have careers and they're long and they have to, you know, just like get funding eventually. So this is the way the world is. I'm going to communicate it now because get the message out there is what I want to do. So the veggie diet studies are well done. They show better results than very loose studies. What that means is that if there's a study done with that shows that's a well done study, it'll show that vegetables are better than meat and dairy and all that kind of stuff, because I just really believe that it's true. A priori, I'm assuming that, but a lot of times you've got the sloppy studies and they get celebrated and as if there's no difference, or that there's, you know, these other kind of diets that are weird, like, you know, paleo or something. There's other ones I could name call. But at the end of the day, why I'm asserting that I think vegetableism or eating a lot of vegetables really is a difference has to do with what happened back in just around the World War I time period, is that there was a pandemic of the Spanish flu, and the world got nailed. Like, millions of people died because of the flu. Now, Mr. Kellogg and Mr. Graham, the Graham of Graham Crackers, they would eat whole wheat. They were strict vegetarians, vegans, and they were not dying. And people were saying, why are you not dying? Because they had groups. They had these groups that gathered together because it's kind of like a very different diet, and they had the community associated with it. And they weren't dying, and they said, well, because we eat whole grains and we don't eat animal products. And so to me, that stands, I don't know about clinical trials because I just told you why they get all sloppy. But at the end of the day, why did the graham cracker people not die? And that's kind of of course, you can look it up on Google and all that kind of stuff. Well, the word graham comes from these people. So graham crackers can turn into anything else now because it's just a word. But back then in the day, it had a lot to do with it. Yep. So we're really at a philosophical perspective at this point, indicating that damn the logic torpedoes, full steam ahead, you know, that this is kind of like the loss of logic. Because logic is strong, but can be overcome by our limbic system, which is our sentiment and emotion. So we have our rational brain and our emotional brain, and we have to be very wise about the fact that either we can get implicated with emotions, make poor choices, or that the society at large does so. Fighting common sense requires bravery, and greed begets bravery. For instance, fighting common sense requires bravery. Like, for instance, if something is straightforward, like, eating vegetables is good for you. But if you're going against that, you have to kind of become brave, like the people who are promoting tobacco or promoting other vices have to be brave because they're so greedy. They want to say, I don't care about science. We will bravely move forward into this realm of I get more money. Which, I mean, this is where greed kind of comes in. And so the you know, full steam ahead, where the theme is greed, the quest for money. So this is where I'm just kind of saying it's leading. You're logically moving towards a problem. And where does the quest for money come from? That's because I think people have a sense of fear that they might lack, or they do lack, or they will lack something in the future. It could be anything. There's so many things that they could lack that they want money for it. And when they do that, that's where their motivation comes from, and it's pretty good. On the other side of it, there's people that, you know, are willy-nilly accept things as they are, and they become complacent, which is the death of logic and the resurrection of nihilism, which, again, this happens to do with the fact that an elephant can be held by a tiny rope because there are uncontrolled bad events where there's a perception of lack of control and generalized helpless behaviors. So what's going on here? The people that have all this money and they're very greedy, they want the masses to be like this, very powerful elephants, but not aware of their power, but more trained.
You know how the elephant got the idea he couldn't get away?
Yeah. Well, and the beauty is that that's how people who have a lot of money want to treat human beings. So human beings, elephants, very similar, so we should be watchful of that. And then layering on top of this, if it wasn't already murky, it's the whole idea of the immediacy of media and the politics of it, and how this relates to the writers of history. Now, what am I saying there? So I am saying that political power is like the stock market, and you have to keep your stock high every single day. So logic has nothing to do with it. It has to be that the perception is power and on top of it, and everything's good. And when you the outcome of that is to close down, go dark, avoid transparency, do everything in secret. I mean, this is clearly an outcome of needing to have a good showing. There's a lot of dirty stuff in the closet. Oh, this is modus operandi. This is what they do. The holder of the microphone gets to define the term with alternative facts, the alternative reality, alternative news, alternative history. So whoever holds the microphone dominates the brain who is listening to this media. So it's immediate, and it's media, and it's politics. So any time that you have people who are trying to do this and have alternative facts, is that if there's something that kind of is obviously like, oh, that's inconsistent, then they rewrite history so it's no longer inconsistent. So there's the whole idea of rough spots need history books to be rewritten, so memory alters. So this is very clear. Again, I think it's called the revisionist history. So it starts with a little bit of science, goes to vegetables, obviously, and then it gets into how layering that society is. So we've come to a society where we need to march for science, because it used to be that it was just so obvious that this is how we lead our culture, and now it's quite obvious that we're in uncharted waters now, because we don't necessarily believe that everyone is on the same page with that. For instance, there's an author who wrote The Death of Science, saying, oh, we found everything in physics, and there's nothing else to do. The only thing left to do is just social control. Everybody controls each other. And so he got paid a lot of money for that, and this is the message that was sent out, completely out of whack, but it hit all the news, and, you know, this is like probably 20 years ago, but it's still what we're really seeing. And it's a blatant disregard for common sense. Brings out the nerds and the introverts. For instance, if we believed that if scientists are really saying that they believe in science and that their politicians are nuts, then the scientists have to come out and say, no, I really do think this is the way to go, and I'm sorry you flunked math, I'm sorry you flunked physics, I'm sorry you flunked chemistry, I'm sorry you flunked all that stuff, but this stuff is real. And so you have nerds that have to stand up and start talking, which is kind of cool. It creates a false equivalency. So what, it's a technique. It's just a modus operandi for saying, okay, well, that's all good, but this really bad thing, that's just as good as the good. And it's alternatively good. Mm-hmm, right. So then the cute aspect I want to bring up here, which is the null hypothesis, which is in statistics, a null hypothesis means, hey, you think that, you know, eating apple a day is good for keeping the doctor away? Well, I don't believe it. Prove it. So that's what the null hypothesis is, that you, first of all, you can't really just say apple a day is useful. You have to prove it through disproving the null hypothesis. So, I am what is the default, the status quo. I'm already accepted, can't be rejected. The burden of proof is always on the alternative. The alternative, I am the null hypothesis. So that's where science comes in and says, the null hypothesis is not correct. There's something that we did, aha. So humans thrive on imagining seeing things. So for instance, if there's a saber-toothed tiger that we imagine, well, okay, we hide away, and if 50% of the time the saber-toothed tiger does come by, then we just saved ourselves. Even though we did extra work when the saber-toothed tiger didn't come by. So imagination is good, but that doesn't mean it's true. It just means that we have an imagination. So proving something as to be very likely is like a worn blanket, and people like things that are true. So if the null hypothesis has been proven, you've now got a new fact, and that's you can just believe on that one through the power of statistics. So being surprised that someone is true is breaking the null hypothesis. So being surprised, so there's a joy in statistics where you can say, aha, I used to think this, it was given, and now something else is there. Wow, I love this. It's surprising. And this is a way to confidently be disruptive, confidently be novel. So when you talk about, obviously, Earth Day is about, vegetables, and people are like, oh, whatever, I want to go back to my chips and meat sauce and all that kind of stuff. We can be disruptive. We can be novel and be confident about that, irregardless of where other people are at. So this is kind of interesting. So conclusions are like talismans. We can create an identity around them. For instance, when you have, so many novelty things that science has come up with, you become a totally different person than, say, Joe on the street who's never trained in this way. It's like, no, I don't believe that the world is, round. It's got to be flat. It's always been flat. Why would it not be flat? It's flat right here. So, the beauty is that people can hold on hard to know the stars analysis shows it's round, and you can hold on to that and that's your new identity. So again, with the idea of what Earth Save is doing, we're trying to, be outlandish, but yet be really confident in that. Now, when we have confidence in this, breaking the null hypothesis and good things are happening, most of the people say, I don't care, I'd rather die than do anything different than what I'm doing already. And so, health is don't tell me what to do is the answer you're going to get to almost to everything. So there's the power of community, which is embrace people, whether they be on the streets, they be in the family, or wherever they are, make that community happen first. So that taboo topic doesn't mean that they don't exist. You just act as though it as though it certain things are assumed, if certain things are assumed, I guess so, that's a mistake. They act as if to me. So taboo topics do exist, and we really should be acting like, yep, there's things you can't talk about, like, you know, not eating turkey at Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff. But it's very real, and we're going to act as though we're on it, even though we don't have to talk about it and alienate ourselves in that community. And work on our cultural assumptions to change the world and to change the conversation. So our goal is not necessarily to just say, you are going to decide to behave differently because I know the science. It's going to be one perspective is you're just going to change the entire conversation of the entire world. And this is why it's just a hard sell, because most people don't think that big. And I don't care. This is where you get it done, which is change the entire conversation. Like three hurricanes in a row changes the conversation. It just does. I mean, our culture will never be the same after this event set up this weekend, because we're really starkly faced with something that kind of is a little bit taboo. We'll just see. This is what I'm guessing. And here's the second to last point, which is marathoning, frequent water breaks, and a pace yourself, which is if you marathon, you got to drink and you got to, you know, not go too fast. So same thing with if you want to bite on something really big, which I just said was big, you got to just pace yourself and just go for the long haul. If you don't mind, this is the way I want to approach it. Others would say revolution. I'm just, you know, or slow change. I'm just probably just the approach there, which is it's going to be a while. And then you have to also be aware of psychological trauma to people. I'd rather dive and switch. It is very common that people are not able to entertain. But yeah, if you change the conversation and their whole worldview, then they'd rather die eating vegetables than go somewhere else, is where we want the default to be. Oh, exactly. This is, I'd rather die than switch. I gotta have to die anyway. Yep. So, as a last slide, I just want to bring out some humor, because sometimes humor actually is useful. This is Twitter, and just the beauty of this is that everything is in context. So, here we have someone who's an environmentalist, New York Times or something, and he says, oh, a vegan and an atheist and a libertarian and a nuke buster walked into a bar. He just put that out on Twitter for all of his followers to reply as a joke. Like, this is what, it's a game that they play just for cleverness. And obviously, a vegan, atheist, libertarian, nuke buster are all very, very intense on their topic. And obviously, I'm going to say that, you know, this topic that we were talking about today is towards vegetableism, right? And then one answer quickly thereafter was the bartender takes one look and says at these four people and says, well, what is this, some kind of a joke? And then everybody stops in their tracks because they've never heard the word joke before, meaning that vegans and atheists and libertarians are so serious they never joke about themselves. And never, you know, kind of back away a little bit. So this is the world view that we're in the edgy kind of thoughtful environmentalist. It's also fun to poke vegans if you're bored. And then he says, my God, man, I'm not insane. So because basically them environmentalists know that if you, you know, prod a vegetarian, they're going to just, like, go into it. And it's like, no, I don't want to go there. So, again, it's that whole power of community rather than saying, logic. We're saying that it's kind of a more contextualized society. And here's another point is a vegan cross-fitting marine pilot walks into a bar. A vegan cross-fitting marine pilot walks into a bar. Which one does he tell you that he is first? For instance, it's basically saying that CrossFitting people are nuts about CrossFit. And Marines are nuts about being Marines. And it's intense exercise. Intense. And then a Marine pilot is obviously big on, you know, military and stuff. And then the vegan, of course, is like, I'm a vegan. I'm all about it. And they'll talk about it forever. So how interesting it is that we have to contextualize that people kind of are looking at us as people who are oriented towards hardcore. Can't take a joke. Don't lighten it up at all. So there you go. It's a tough world, but I believe that science will be the way to go. And science or money, you can pick your choice. And the food is our gun. See, now that's my perspective. And I wondered if this presentation, like I said, is going to be up on the podcast and the blog. I made those slides, yeah. No, I didn't do the artwork. You find it, you put it together, and there you go. This is done on PowerPoint. Yeah. Oh, like that data point? Well, that's just science. That's a Google image. It is. It's the science of the data point of your diastolic and peristaltic blood pressure. Oh. No, I just pulled them out of my head. Yeah, because I have education. And I just said, well, I think I want to generalize it in this way. Now, obviously, because it is the PowerPoint and it's up on the blog, you can cross-check and you can say, oh, whatever you said was wrong. But generally, I would say that, but really it comes down to, she starts with a thread and then it brings you all the way down to, oh my gosh, what are we going to do, and then apply it. So I hope that we've got it. This was done in a couple hours last night. Yeah. And then what I'll do is I'll just translate this over to a PDF file, because most people have PDF viewers rather than PowerPoint, and you won't be able to watch it in just a PowerPoint. So that's the end of my presentation, I guess, and certainly want to encourage people to think about it. There you go.